returned at your service. I'm Johnny Rambut, and Chris Nofziger is waiting in the wings, so to speak. Chris, we've been talking about the Limp Mansion. I was just looking at a copy of the Nostalgia Globe Democrat about January 1961, when the Limp Mansion is slated to be demolished for Highway 55. Fortunately, that and the Demonil were able to survive, as well as the Bissell Mansion in North St. Louis. What's going on with the Bissell Mansion? Do you know, Chris?
I guess the word is out. It's not doing well. The owners have it for sale. Don't quote me on this, but I think the current asking price is $200,000. But I've been told that it's gotten broken into and things have been getting stolen out of it, unfortunately. That's the word on the street, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that to be true because of where it is situated, in the neighborhood it's in, it's isolated, it's empty. Well, things like that do happen. I hope they can do something with it.
Yeah, I think what's going to have to happen is that maybe I think the state is going to have to step in. Maybe it could buy it and save it as a historic site. But in its current state with the current ownership, it's just it's going to further fall into disrepair, and it does not have a bright future in its current status.
Well, now you are seen every month now in St. Louis Magazine.
Yeah, I write maybe one article a month in St. Louis Magazine. I really enjoy it, so definitely subscribe to St. Louis Magazine. It's a great place to write, and I've been really impressed. There's just been amazing stuff happening right now. St. Louis Magazine picked up a couple of Riverfront Times reporters, a couple people I have a lot of respect for. Good. And I think you should definitely tune in. You can subscribe to a new daily newsletter. And also, like I said, there's a monthly magazine. So definitely subscribe or subscribe to the newsletter online or the print edition.
Yeah, there you go. So you're in the last page of the magazine, which is what have you covered in that, in those articles? It's just usually one topic. Eadsbridge one.
Yeah, the last one I did was East Bridge. I have to admit, I have a little bit of amnesia. I write, on a broad range of subjects is maybe what I'll say as I write about. So
that's good. Now, what about a podcast? We were talking, and you said there was something coming up.
Yeah, so there actually are already at least three, and there's going to be a fourth episode coming out. So I've been working with Max Cassily. He is the son of Gail and Bob Cassily, the founders of the City Museum. And we've been working on half-hour podcasts that basically are talking about the history of the founding of the City Museum and the life of Bob Cassily. And I think it's been going really great. Bob is a fascinating figure. We've also been, talking about Gail Cassily, who was just as much of an equal partner in the founding of the City Museum. And Max has, great contacts with all of their friends, and we have exclusive content. It's free. You can also subscribe, and that gives you access to exclusive content, including a lot of video footage. Max has been able to procure just some absolutely incredible footage of his dad and his mom and some of their earliest collaborators working on the City Museum, them actually with trowels, creating some of the first, the whale, some of the original pieces of the City Museum. So I think what's really great about this podcast is that you get it straight from Max and, straight from some of the closest friends and family members of Bob Cassily and Gail Cassily. And you basically get the straight dope. I think there's a lot of people who, try to claim that, I was the best friends of Bob Cassily. And Max can say, well, okay, this person really is one of my dad's best friends, and this person was not one of my dad's best friends. So, there's kind of you're getting the straight story. The first episode is kind of long because we kind of set the stage. But then the following episodes are half hour long. They're perfect to listen to when you're driving to work or home from work. And you can find it on Spotify, just Google Cassily Chronicles. And you can also find it online, CassilyChronicles.net.
How do you spell Cassily?
Oh, Cassily is C-A-S-S and then I-L-L-Y and then Chronicles. And like I said, just Google us and you'll find it. I think, recent St. Louis history sometimes is something that's not covered. You know, right. We have the 19th century really well covered. And then early 20th century history in St. Louis is pretty well covered. But then, you know, as the 20th century passes by, you know, historians start to not cover it as well. And late 20th century, early 21st century is just as interesting history. And particularly the City Museum is so unique.
Yes, it is.
I'm not a compensated, you know, spokesperson, but I think it really is true that there's nowhere else in the world like the City Museum. And, you know, documenting the history of the people who collaborated with the Cassilys to create that, I think is something that is really special. And I hope people tune in, and if they want to subscribe to get that extra content, which includes these videos of Bob and Gail actually at work creating it.
Oh, great.
It is really pretty amazing.
Thank you, Chris, for being with us today. And now the book. Do you have a name for the book about Adam Lemp?
One of my friends kind of joked that the title of the book is kind of boring, but I don't like those kind of people who try to come up with really catchy titles. Mine's just nice and straightforward. It's Adam Lemp. It's Adam Lemp and the Western Brewery.
Oh,
and that's what it's going to be called. And so it's nice and easy to find. You don't have to try to think of what the witty title is. It's Adam Lemp and the Western Brewery. Just search for that. It should be out in 2025. And I'll be doing some promoting of it when it does come out.
I hope so. And, well, you get back to the cicadas over there in Jerseyville.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're calling me to get back.
I think they are. Thank you, Chris Knopfziger, very much.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon. You're quite welcome.
All right.
This is Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service. We are going to have the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater head, Donna Northcott. She's here. She's right now. We're going to talk about that and a lot of other things, including The Lord of the Rings and Julius Caesar and Hooch and Daddy-O and who knows what all in the next few minutes. Now, what you have to do is stay there and listen to At Your Service with yours truly, Johnny Rabbit at KMOX.
Stay connected with the heartbeat of St. Louis. KMOX News, bringing you the stories that matter most. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
This is Johnny Rabbit at your service. I was just noticing this is by accidental. Of our five guests today that we're having on the air, five, all of them, except one, Peter Mayer, who lives in the Washington, D.C. area, live in the city of St. Louis. That's your case, too, Donna Northcott.
Longtime St. Louisan, yes.
Good. Where did you grow up?
Born and raised in Afton. I grew up in Afton, but spent a few years living in Chicago in the middle there, but had to come back.
Oh, yeah, of course. A lot of people do come back from Chicago. That's not at all. Well, you're here, and you've created something. You are the creator, are you not, of the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater?
Yes, indeed.
Oh,
and that was actually inspired by a production I saw in Chicago by the Annoyance Theater, which was doing the real live Brady Bunch. And I didn't know it at the time, but Jane Lynch was playing Mrs. Brady in that.
Hmm.
And I saw her, and this was before she became very well known.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw her in the early part of her career.
Ah, that's great.
And she was very funny then, too.
Well, I bet. Now, what is the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater? This is not a theater as far as a physical place. This is
correct. It's a theater company. Magic Smoking Monkey is a parody theater. We do original one-hour parodies of pop culture favorites. So we've done live stage productions of things like right now we got the Lord of the Rings trilogy. We've done Titanic, we've done Planet of the Apes, and some of my favorites have been reboots of 1940s movies like the Ed Wood classics, Glenn or Glenda, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Love it.
And just we take them and try to cram as many jokes as we can into an hour.
For Plan 9 from Outer Space, that'd be pretty easy to do.
Yes, that's shooting fish in a barrel.
Where do you do the productions?
Right now, we've been working this year at the Don Lux Family Theater, which is on the campus of Lift for Life Academy in Soulard. So it's right at the corner of Geyer and 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And the other cross street there is Broadway, so I guess we can say we're doing off-Broadway shows.
Hey, you are. That's pretty good. I'll feature that next week, next Sunday morning.
Thank
I'm going
you.
To be talking about South Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll be sure to get that in there. And then you mentioned Don Lux?
Don Lux, yes.
Well, I don't know who that is.
And I apologize, I don't either, but he has an affiliation with Lift for Life Academy. Uh-huh. So I'm assuming the family was wanting to support the school.
So the now the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yes.
That's going on right now?
Yes, we have a performance that is going on as we speak, and then we have one more weekend. So next weekend, it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, each night at 8 o'clock, and the show runs just about spot on an hour.
Oh, that's great. What's it cost to get in a show like
this? It's $20 general admission, $15 for students and teachers.
Mm-hmm. And Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar coming up next, because I like doing... things that are very diametrically opposed.
Yes.
So that's with St. Louis Shakespeare, which is sort of where I started with. I founded St. Louis Shakespeare 40 years ago this year.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I feel like that, too. And so we do a couple of Shakespeare productions every year. And I'm very proud to say we're one of only, I think, 6 or 7 companies in the United States to have produced all of Shakespeare's works.
That is something.
So
that is really. What do you do? Is it the same place at this?
Yes, we just moved into the Don Lux Theater at the beginning of this calendar year, and are very grateful to be able to do all of our shows there. Makes it so much easier for the audience too.
What size theater is this?
It seats a little over 100.
Good,
and it's very comfortable seating and large parking lot adjacent to the building. And in Soulard, you know, if you want to get dinner or drinks before or after the show, you have limitless choices.
You sure do. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So it's a nice location.
Now, have you cast Julius Caesar?
No. The auditions for that are coming up on August 24th. And so we're hoping for a good turnout there.
How many members?
I'm not sure. We have a guest director, Aria Locker, who is doing this production. And typically with the Shakespeare plays, you know, you may eliminate a couple of the smaller roles, like a messenger or something, mm-hmm. or have one actor double into a couple or three smaller parts. So I don't know what her final number is yet, but sometimes that's decided after you see the auditions. You see a lot of good people and think, oh, I want to make sure I use all of them.
So if somebody's listening and they say, I'd like to audition for that, what do they have to do?
If you would just email auditions@stlshakespeare.org, and that will get to me, and just email me any of your questions about that, and I'll be happy to get back to you within a day or two.
auditions@stlshakespeare.org.
Yes.
Now, away from the stage, we go to the silver screen.
Okay.
What have you done?
Well, only one big one, Hooch and Daddy-O. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that, but it's a, again, a parody. It kind of grew out of a number of the people who were working with Magic Smoking Monkey Theater, mm-hmm. and primarily Jim Ousley. And Jim and I had gone to see a movie, which was a comedy, and it just wasn't as funny as the previews looked like it should be. And Hooch and Daddy-O, in fact, was a... I'm going back one more step now to be correct.
All right.
It was an in-joke during a production of Richard III with St. Louis Shakespeare. Hmm. And Jim and another actor, Randall Middleton, had these 70s leather jackets, just their personal wardrobe, and they'd walk into rehearsal, and the other actors were making fun of them, calling them Starsky and Hutch. And pretty soon that turned into Hooch and Daddy-O. And then gradually everyone in the cast of Richard III became a character on this imaginary 80s TV cop show. And they would sit backstage talking about, oh, do you remember this, that, or the other episode, which never existed. And then Jim and I saw a film, a comedy movie, which wasn't, and came out of there saying, boy, Hooch and Daddy-O's funnier than that.
That's great.
And then that kind of triggered something. And we
said, did this happen, like 20 years ago?
Yes, yes. And it literally was one of these ideas that stupider people than us have made movies, so why couldn't
not?
We do it? Yeah.
And you did it.
And we did. And I'm still sometimes surprised that we actually did it.
Where can people see this?
At the High Point. It's a 20th anniversary showing in October. Hmm. And get your tickets early because they're going fast.
At the High Point in October, you can contact the High Point Theater, and then what is a great theater, too.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yes.
What they do there and how they save the place.
Yes.
Who knows what would have happened? What about future movies? Any other plans, or you're sticking to the stage?
I think sticking to the stage for now, but we are working on a new, an original Magic Smoking Monkey show for next year. So we're looking at a holiday production. And once Lord of the Rings closes and I get a minute to catch my breath, we'll be starting on that one. So I will plan on at least having two Smoking Monkey shows again next year.
No, that's great. You do a lot. You stay very busy, that's for sure.
Yes, I do. And sometimes I question that decision.
No, it's a good decision to have. You got a lot of the same teammates, crew members, associates.
We do. And it's we'll get a lot of people coming back. But then it's nice that we always have new people joining the company. It keeps it fresh. And, you know, everybody eventually is going to decide, I'm too old for this nonsense. And so you want to have a new generation coming up.
That's very true. You've got a lot of good plans, too. And you've got a lot of good past and stuff. And the film can come back again. I'm excited about seeing that again.
I am, too, because I only saw it once on the big screen. And was when it first...
At the Tivoli.
Yes, when it first premiered. And, of course, I have a copy at home, a DVD at home, but...
That's not the same.
It's not.
No.
It's not.
The big screen. Well, thank you for being on our screen today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, Donna, I appreciate it. I'm so excited about all of this, but especially about seeing Hooch and Daddy-O again in October.
Can we mention one of the celebrity appearances?
Of course.
Your lovely daughter, Amy.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. I'll tell her you
mentioned
that.
Who is a very prominent featured character in the movie.
Oh, that's great.
It's fabulous.
She will thank you, too. All right, that's Donna Northcutt. I'm Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service in KMOX. And next, we're going to hear from Peter Mayer, a voice that you have heard I don't know how many times, and always want to hear it again on KMOX. So my friend of some 57 years, longtime White House correspondent for CBS Radio, and he was also with Mutual and NBC. He's going to be with us, and we're not talking about radio, and we're not talking about politics. We're talking about, a lot of it has to do with growing up in Granite City and Granite City, Illinois today. We're at your service in KMOX. I'm Johnny Rabbit.
Everything St. Louis Cardinals. It's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
Hey, we're at your service. This is Johnny Rabbit at KMOX, and from out of the east, we once again connect with Peter Mayer. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Johnny. You are the voice of St. Louis.
You're very kind. Well, we are on the voice of St. Louis, and you have been, it's all these years, the voice of news. But we're not talking about news today. We're not going to talk about politics. But Brad Choate is in the studio with us right now, and you told me about something initially that I heard first from you. That, Brad, what did you do about this program about neon in Granite City?
That's right. Welcome to the show.
And good to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, Peter. I know you. Next time you're back in town, you'll enjoy going to see the It's Electric on Route 66 neon sign park that's in downtown Granite.
I look forward to seeing that.
It's they got a nearly $500,000 state grant from the state of Illinois, and it came through the Great Rivers and Routes Tourism Bureau in order to rehab this corner in downtown Granite, and they brought back three signs: Hudson Jewelers, Reese Drugs, and Washington Theater. I bet you remember those three businesses.
Oh, so many memories of all of those businesses, Brad. We used to go to Hudson Jewelers to get those, I forget what they were called, Spandiflex ID bracelets that were so popular back when I was in high school at Granite City. There was a little like flip compartment. You could put a picture of your girlfriend, your boyfriend, or your dog, your car, whatever, and everybody was buying those at Hudson's. And, of course, the Washington Theater was just the place in the central part of Granite City. I remember as a small child going there for Saturday matinees. They have, two movies, a double feature, and 10 cartoons. And the manager, and a man by the name of Mr. Pashoff, would walk through the aisles at the intermission and hand out candy to the kids, strips of lollipops. So, yeah, a lot of memories.
And I bet Johnny Rabbit will remember this. Ike and Tiener's Revue came through the Washington Theater.
Sure did. That was something. That was a big deal. That was, you know, but it looks, you know, from the pictures, looks like it's back, but it's not there anymore.
It's just the signage, and then they have Route 66 murals of some of the other businesses that are on the old mother route from Granite City. You know, they call it the last 100 miles in Illinois. Hmm. So that's part of the what they wrote the grant for.
Now, how long have these neon signs been up?
They've just been up a little less than a month. So
they're beautiful. I mean, how are they going to be taken care of? Protected?
Through the city of Granite City, Public Works is in charge of it. And they also have some signage there that if you go through, you can learn about the history of it all. And then there's a mini Chain of Rocks bridge there, too. And it looks like the old bridge that came down,
sure,
that they took down. And what you can do there is, I think I've actually seen this on the Olympic coverage in France. There's a bridge there that they put locks on. They want people to, like, write on their, you know, in memory of my dad, and put their lock on this bridge.
How interesting. I mean, that really, the whole thing is a very creative idea. Of course, it costs a lot of money, and that's good that they were able to get the money, or they couldn't have done it, and they've got the money to keep it up and all that. So it is something to see, to bring people back to Granite City.
That's right. What they're hoping is they'll get tourists to come through and then stop and see some of the quaint shops and restaurants that are there.
Who knows? Bill Woodrum Oldsmobile may come back.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
That was a big, big business there. And there were so many. Well, thank you, Brad, for doing what you did.
Quick question for Brad. Is this a permanent thing, or is it temporary? How are they going to do that?
It is a permanent thing.
Wonderful.
So, you'll see some of your other favorite businesses. O'Brien Tires on there. Mr. Twist is on the wall of murals. Different businesses like that. That some are still around, and of course, those two are still around. So, and then there's a nice picture of a locomotive of the Terminal Railroad. So,
gosh, there's really a lot to see.
There is a lot to see.
What about places, if you were to come over there, any good places to eat?
Oh, there's all kinds of good places, yeah. Brenda Whitaker really has. The downtown diner is good.
Oh.
Garden Gate, yeah.
Good. Well, thank you, Brad.
Okay.
Thanks very much. And Peter Mayer, you obviously were from that area. You grew up where?
I grew up right in Granite City, yes.
And what's good to school? What school?
I went to Niedring House Grade School. The building is still there, but it's been long closed. It looks like a big castle or fortress, but unfortunately the building is closed, but it's still standing. And then just a block or so away from there is Coolidge Junior High that I attended, mm-hmm, and Granite City High School that I somehow made it through.
And I'm a Namioke School guy,
oh,
and that's no longer there.
It's gone.
It's gone.
A lot of stuff is gone in Granite City, unfortunately, but who knows? With this new emphasis, you know, you can bring it back to life. Peter, you might want to buy that school that you were in if it's available.
You know, there's something bittersweet about all of it, about the neon display, because those businesses are long gone. But the community just deserves so much credit for these efforts and others to develop the downtown area.
Well, what about some of your memories growing up? What was some of the things you did? Did you come over to St. Louis a lot?
Oh, yes. You know, a lot of memories, of course, going over every winter to look at the holiday windows at Famous and Styx and Scruggs, Vandevert, Barney.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had some neat windows in downtown Granite, too, back in the day. But, you know, to go over there and stand outside of Famous and look at the model train display that they had there, and you could press a little button on the window and it would make the whistles blow through a speaker. So, yeah, great memories of that. And also just taking the streetcar that he mentioned, the Illinois Terminal, we'd take the streetcar, I guess later it was Bi-State, from downtown Granite City to St. Louis. I'm trying to remember, Johnny, where it terminated. You know, I remember something, sort of a tunnel, and then you'd go up the steps into downtown St. Louis.
Hmm. I don't know what that was.
One of my favorite memories, and this is a sort of, if you remember the TV show Leave It to Beaver.
Yep.
This was sort of a Leave It to Beaver memory. A bunch of buddies and I would always make arrangements to go to St. Louis to, what were the theaters in downtown? The Ambassador.
Yep.
And the
Lowe's State. Lowe's Orpheum.
And whenever the new James Bond movies would come out, you know, from Russia with Love or Goldfinger. We would get on the trolley, a bunch of, you know, Boy Scout buddies, school buddies, and we go to St. Louis to see the James Bond movies. Well, we had a favorite. One of the boys discovered a sandwich shop. It was actually a counter in the back of a liquor store, real close to the movie theater. And we'd go there and get sub sandwiches and a soft drink and have a lunch at the counter. And about the third time we went there, we were going in, and the fellow that owned the store would make the sandwiches on fresh bread, and he had, you know, cold cuts and, sure, and lettuce and ketchup and mayonnaise and so forth. Well, we're in there this time, and this guy walks up to the cutting board, proceeds to reach in his mouth and take out his dentures and put them right next to the cutting board.
No.
You never saw four or five boys from Granite City run as fast as they could. And he said, "Wait a minute, I am not done with your order." And we said, "We don't want to eat off of that counter."
Oh, how weird.
You can just picture it. You can hear the theme music in the background as these boys ran out of there.
Peter, when did you decide to get into radio? How did that all come about?
Oh, my goodness. That happened in Granite City, too. You know, I had always wanted to be a reporter. Don't ask me why. It's not in my genes. Nobody in my family had been in journalism. I was about 8 years old, and I have some of the clips from little school newspapers and camp newspaper. I went to Camp Ben Frankel in Southern Illinois, and I recently sent them the little story that I wrote for the camp newspaper. So I always wanted to be a reporter. And I always wanted to be a newspaper reporter. My idols worked for the Granite City Press Record. Hmm. Press Record came out twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. People called it the Bible of Granite City because everybody looked at it for every kind of announcement of news and social things and births and deaths. You know, just a wonderful paper that sadly, like so many papers in so many small towns, has been long gone. But anyway, came the sad day when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and I lived near Wilson Park, and they had a memorial service in the park for President Kennedy, and we had a community gathering there, and I saw my friend from the Granite City Press Record, who lived around the corner from me, and he was there taking pictures and taking notes of what the dignitaries were saying, and then I saw the WGNU radio station wagon there. And they were on the air live with this. And it occurred to me when I was just a kid, this is very interesting. The guy from the newspaper is going to have to wait several days before his story gets out. But the people listening to the radio are hearing it as it happens.
That's true.
And in 1964, I am dating myself now, 60 years ago, I went to the Boy Scout Jamboree at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And I was the troop correspondent, and I mailed stories, I hate to say, because, you know, in this instantaneous age we live in now, mailed tape-recorded reports to WGNU Radio and typewritten reports to the newspaper.
Sure.
And when I returned home the following year, they called me from WGNU and said, "Hey, we're starting a high school news show every Saturday morning. Would you like to do it?" And boy, I said, yes, let me talk to my mom and dad.
Of course.
So that's where radio started for me when I was in high school at Granite City.
My, my, my. Now, who was that at WGNU? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. At WGNU, it was Bob Baker, whose real name was Al Stevens. And, of course, his son, Al Stevens, worked at KMOX.
Sure did. Production director there.
Wonderful, wonderful man. And so he called me and said, you know, we'd like to talk to you about this. And I can tell you, I made big money doing that show.
I can imagine.
$4 a week.
A week? That's amazing.
It was a half-hour show, and they paid me $4, Ron.
Oh, my gosh.
Not exactly union scale.
Not exactly. Now, we'll come back. I'd like to talk a little more if you have a few more minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, good. We'll be back right after we hear some commercial announcements. I don't think there's going to be any political announcements, though. Hmm. Well, anyway, this is At Your Service. I'm Johnny Rabbit, and this is KMOX.
I'm Megan Lynch. This is KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Johnny Rabbit, we're at your service at KMOX. We've been talking about a lot of things, especially Granite City, though, with Peter Mayer, who was you're from that area. Are you ever going to come back, move back to St. Louis from the East Coast?
No.
Okay.
You know, but I've been here well over half my life, and this is, you know, where so many circle of friends and where our kids grew up, and some still are, so this is home now. But I'll tell you, there's not a day goes by that I don't think about Granite City and my gratitude for having grown up there. But it's fun to come back and visit with you and Mrs. Rabbit.
Yes,
so
yes,
hi to her.
We enjoy that.
And just before I forget, just a really big thank you to Brad Choate for also carrying the Granite City banner when he can, and hi to Stacy Choate, too.
Oh, good. Good for you to say that. He really does a great job of it as well. Granite City, but how did that name come out? Where did it come about? What Granite?
Best as I know, and I'm certainly not a historian about it, but there used to be a product that was made there called Graniteware.
Right.
And so I think, you know, that a lot of it stems from that. There were two brothers, the Niedringhaus brothers. There's a Niedringhaus Avenue through one of the main streets through Granite City, and I mentioned Niedringhaus School. They were from St. Louis, but they saw something in the Granite City area for industry, and they invested in it heavily and laid out the street grid, very unique street grid in Granite City, and so many other things. So there's a lot of great history there, and you can find out about it at the, I believe, the 6 Mile Museum outside of town and the wonderful Madison County History Museum in Edwardsville.
Oh, yeah, it is a great museum. They just did I think it's over with, Mississippi River Festival. Excellent.
Oh, yes, yes. The MRF was at SIU Edwardsville.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Now, what about newspapers? What do you read as far? Do you have a daily newspaper or two that you read each day?
You know, I guess I'm an East Coaster. I read the New York Times and the Washington Post every day. Much to my wife's dismay sometimes, with my nose in my computer following them. And I try to, you know, I look at the Post-Dispatch. I look at, you know, some of the newspapers in Illinois, too. But, again, not to be a downer, but I really mourn the loss of the community newspapers in so many cities like my hometown. I mean, there's nobody around to hold the politicians' feet to the fire, to cover the school boards, the city council, all of the other public institutions that need to be watched.
That's true. Very true. What about radio? What do you listen to as far as radio stations?
Well, because we can listen online, listen to my friends on so many stations all over the country, and I'm a daily listener to KMOX, and that's why it's just such a thrill to be on with you.
And television. What are you watching TV? Do you have special programs, special networks that you like?
Well, you know, as a CBS veteran, I watch the CBS Evening News. Nora O'Donnell, the anchor, is a good friend of mine, and we worked at the White House together for a number of years. And so I watch that because, you know, I see my friends reporting from all over the world. Sure. And live vicariously through some of the things that they're covering, especially these days.
Nora O'Donnell is going to be leaving CBS Evening News?
Yes. She is. She's going to become a special correspondent and do interviews for 60 Minutes, and that is certainly one of her strengths, and you have to hand it to her for, you know, being in the anchor chair for, I guess, 5 years or so. You know, it's quite a grind to commit to that. And, you know, she's a mom, and I think, you know, that this will give her other opportunities. They moved the evening news to Washington, D.C., when Nora became the anchor, because it is her home, and her husband has a thriving restaurant business in the Washington area. And so they're going to move it back to New York at the broadcast center up in New York with a couple of, I guess, rotating anchors. I haven't exactly seen what the format's going to be. Another good friend of mine, John Dickerson, an incredible journalist. John will be one of the anchors. along with Maurice Dubois, who is an anchor at WCBS-TV in New York, and he'll be moving over to the network. And then Margaret Brennan is going to handle the Washington duties.
I see. Well, Peter, thank you. I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you for taking the time, though, to speak with us. And I like this neon thing. Maybe that's going to go places. Maybe other cities will pick up on that idea.
It is so unique, and I give them so much credit for that. And Brad's the guy, Brad Choate's the guy who's been on top of it for reporting. So thanks for having me on. Good to be with you.
And thank you. Thanks, Peter. We'll see it. See you and Elizabeth soon, I know. Well, this is Johnny Rabbit on KMOX. You know, these signs, in a way, it's kind of like a ghost town because the places aren't really there. The Washington Theater isn't really there, but you look at the marquee and you say, it's there. Or the same with Reese Drugs and Hutchin Jewelers. But, you know, we can do the same in St. Louis. I've like bringing back some of the signs, like maybe we talked about the Lowe's State Theater down in Washington, that big, beautiful marquee that they have. Recreated. Or the Cat's Drugstore sign. And there were several of them with that big cat head. The one in Maplewood comes to mind. The St. Louis Dairy Clock. I can bring that back. That was at 20th and Pine, right there by the soccer stadium and Union Station. That was a really landmark sign. A big neon sign that could come back again in an odd location. They're right on South Grand at Flad. Leon A. Klink Used Cars. One of the best neon signs in the city of St. Louis ever. And then Palace Bowling Alley on the hill. That's gone, but they had this long sign where a guy is actually rolling a bowling ball and the pins fly off at the end. And then there was the Union Electric sign downtown with Ready Kilowatt. Well, that's it for us for today. We'll be back again. I'm not sure when as far as At Your Service. I hope soon. But I will be here Sunday morning with Scott Jagow. And we're going to go back again on Broadway. Today we did Broadway, the north side of Broadway. And this coming Sunday we'll do South Broadway. It's all yours on KMOX. And this is Johnny Rabbit. Thank you very much for listening. And you are here at your service at KMOX.